all of you, and because I think of the various things that I love about my life is being involved in politics and democratic politics, and being able to support a candidate whom I know really well and love. I have been involved in a lot of Democratic presidential candidates campaigns, and Ed Muskie was kind of, actually my first Democratic campaign experience was when I was at Wellesley in 1956. My first fundraising efforts were for Adlai Stevenson in Boston. And this kind of colored my whole life. We were walking around calling, asking for dollars for Democrats. And we were walking through Boston, and this man came up to me and said, $5 for you, baby, but not $1 for the Democrats. So that was beginning for me. I do want to talk about this year and about Hillary and my favorite things about her. Let me just tell you my relationship with her. We went to the same college. She's 10 years younger than I am, but I do know where she gets her study habits, and we do compare notes about what it was like when we were there. And I kind of met her when she was doing things called the Children's Defense Fund. She would come to Washington and work on that. I met at that stage Governor Clinton when I was working for Michael Dukakis, and Bill Clinton came up to help him do debate prep. And then it turns out that he had gone to Georgetown where I was teaching, so there were endless kind of combinations of things. During the Clinton administration, my first job was as ambassador to the United Nations, and Hillary, as First Lady, was really interested in what was going on. And she came up to New York quite a lot. There were a lot of jokes about the fact that she was channeling Eleanor Roosevelt, who had really loved coming up to the UN. We spent a lot of time together and got to be friends then, and that's when we went out to the Beijing Women's Conference in 1995, where she made the speech that kind of riveted everybody in terms of saying that women's rights were human rights and human rights were women's rights. And then we did things together on a lot of issues at the UN. Now, there are many reasons I'm supporting Hillary Clinton, but I would not have been Secretary of State if it hadn't been for her. And the reason I know that is that President Clinton said so publicly when we were traveling abroad one time. So we were somewhere in Central America, and we do this thing where I would introduce her and she would introduce him, and he actually said the following thing. So what happened was, it was clear that Secretary Christopher didn't want to stay for a second term, and so there were always kind of mentioning about who would be the next Secretary of State. And there were people who said a woman could not be Secretary of State, and especially the Arabs would never accept a woman Secretary of State. So what happened was the Arab ambassadors at the UN got together and said, we had no problem dealing with Ambassador Albright, we wouldn't have any problem dealing with Secretary Albright. So that went away. Then somebody else, I never want to know who, in the White House said, yeah, Madeleine's on the list, but she's second tier. So I truly did not think I was going to be Secretary of State. And so what President Clinton said at that time was, well, during this time of great mentioning, that Hillary would say to him, why wouldn't you name Madeleine? She is closest to your views, expresses them better than anybody else, and besides, it would make your mother happy. So we spent a lot of time together when I was secretary, and in many ways kind of tag team in terms of the things that she was interested in, that I was interested in, and it was a time to really see something that she's been doing now, not only in the United States, but when she was secretary, is to get down and, you know, there are lots of fancy meetings that one has as Secretary of State in rooms and a lot of flags and tea. But she liked to go out and talk to the people. And that is something that she really was doing as Secretary of State in terms of dealing, trying to figure out what the societies were like, dealing on the issues that she cared about, both in the United States and abroad, families, the roles of people within their political systems, women's issues. So I think she really did an incredible amount to restore America's reputation after some very bad years with the previous people. And I think that she really, you were asking what I like most about her. is her people sense and her capability of really, when she says she goes on listening tours, she actually listens. When people ask me what's the sign of a great leader listens. And a great leader is interested in a lot of different views, and she is very much that kind of a person. One of the other favorite things was I talked about yesterday. We got to be very good friends over our daughters. I have three, she has one, and we used to do mother-daughter things. And all of us go out together. I was with Chelsea yesterday, and she talked a lot about her relationship with her mother and how much time they spend together, and we used to talk about those things and really understand. What I like about her is the humanity, and I hope that that really, as you all get to know her, that comes through. I have never, and I can say this with some historical knowledge, seen anybody that is better prepared to be President of the United States. As I described her life very briefly, she is somebody that has had a huge interest in domestic policy in a number of different ways, beginning with the Children's Defense Fund and what she did as First Lady of Arkansas. Clearly, her interest and understanding of the healthcare situations, education, I mean, really has a grasp of domestic policy. And she is fantastic in foreign policy. The bottom line is, there are not a lot of people that, I'm not bad in foreign policy, but the bottom line is how you get the brain to function in two different places on domestic and foreign policy and combine it, and she knows how to do it. And she understands that in order to make America be America and be a leader and have our people feel comfortable, we have to be safe in the world. And that combination of how we operate on both things, I think, is very truly important. I think what you all are doing is so essential in every way. There is a great responsibility to being Iowans. You know, you are the first. I have been here a number of times in previous times, and the caucuses are fascinating and so essential, and they need all of you to bring the people out. There's just no question. I think the get out the vote, you're all going to go practice now, and I think on a nice day. and I think basically I have such respect for what you are doing. One of the things that I'm chairman of the board of an organization called the National Democratic Institute, which does democracy work abroad. And one of the things I love to talk about abroad is our democracy, and you are our democracy. There is no way to replicate the kinds of things that you are doing, of putting yourselves out there, getting your friends and acquaintances to come to caucuses, then to participate in them, to be able to explain what it's all about. And so my hat's off to you. There is nothing better than seeing the American people go out and put our feet and our hands and our brains to where our mouth is and really be able to move the process forward. I do think you cannot be doing it on behalf of a better candidate. There's no way that I can really emphasize that, because from my personal knowledge of her and obviously from following what she did when she was senator, the combination of all the different aspects of her life do make her a perfect candidate, and we can make history one more time. When she became secretary, my youngest daughter at that time was 7, and she said, "So what's the big deal about Grandma Maddie being Secretary of State? Only girls are Secretary of State." So, a good run. There are a lot of men out there now who take a lot of inspiration from John Kerry that they can be Secretary of State. But Hillary is somebody that has broken, shattered many glass ceilings, and this is the last one that has to be. One of the things that's interesting is I travel abroad, there are other countries who have women presidents, and we love to be the first. We are not the first in this. It's about time we did this, and we have the perfect candidate. I think that is my opinion. So let me tell you about my pins. What happened was that I clearly like jewelry, but when I arrived at the United Nations, which was in February 93, I was an instructed ambassador, and the Gulf War had happened, and the ceasefire was translated into a series of sanctions resolutions. And my instructions were to make sure that the sanctions stayed on. And so I had to say, perfectly terrible things about Saddam Hussein constantly, which he deserved. He'd invaded Kuwait. So after a while, there was a poem that appeared in the papers in Baghdad comparing me to many things, but among them an unparalleled serpent. And so I had a snake pin, and I wore the snake pin when we were talking about Iraq. So I think you've seen when the ambassadors come out and talk to the press, so somebody picked up the press and the camera zero in and said, why are you wearing that snake pin? I said, because Saddam Hussein compared me to an unparalleled serpent. And I thought, well, this is fun. So I went out and I bought a lot of costume jewelry to depict what I thought were going to be, what kinds of things we were going to do on that day. So on good days, I wore flowers and butterflies and balloons, and on bad days, a lot of carnivorous animals. And so the other ambassadors began to notice, and they'd say, what are we going to do today? And if you remember, the first President Bush had said, read my lips, no new taxes. And so I said, read my pins. And that's how it all started. I have a show that has been going around. At the moment, it just closed. It's been at the presidential libraries, and it's just closed at the Nixon Library, and it's going to San Francisco, and then it's going to the Reagan Library, and ultimately the Johnson Library. And it was at the Czech and Slovak Museum in Cedar Rapids. And by the way, you were talking about my life story. So my father was a diplomat. He was the Czechoslovak ambassador in Yugoslavia. And the little girl in the pictures in a national costume that gives flowers at the airport, that's what I used to do for a living. And so my costume is at the Czech and Slovak Museum. And I'm going to Cedar Rapids tomorrow to have some Czech kolache. But I'm very happy to answer questions about anything, but mostly I just really, really admire what you're doing. And you are the spirit of what this country is about. And every door that you knock on and every person you get to the caucus and every person you persuade that we have the single best candidate makes this country better and better. And she will be great. She really will be great. And one of the things people have said is, you know, she expected to be a coronation. I know her so well, there is no way. She knew it was going to be hard work. We were together 2 days ago. Unfortunately, it was at a memorial service. But we were talking about how she knows how hard she has to work, that's what she's used to. She gives her all, and she will and continue to do so, and she will when she's president. But I think that nobody should think that she thought this was going to be easy. I know from having talked to her over the years, she knows this is hard work, and she is a genuinely hard worker who's up to it. So, anything you'd like to add?
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, please.
It is refreshing to hear an intelligent woman speaking, and it is such a contrast to what we're seeing on TV from the other party. It is, I'm very proud to be a Democrat.
Well, I think that's exactly what we should be thinking and saying, because it's a way of putting context into the answers, to understanding what the issues are, not giving some one-line answer that is smart-ass. And what I think it does, frankly, is show her confidence in the American people, that people want to hear that this is not a reality show, that this is something where people, these are very, very serious issues. And I think it's a very important point to make, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, there's numerous failed states in the Middle East now. I mean, you got Syria, you have Libya's failed, Iraq's partially failed. How do we unwind this to get some type of order back to the Middle East?
Well, I think it's a long story, frankly, and if I might go back a little bit on something, President Clinton, the first President Clinton, read a lot, and he would assign books to us. And one he assigned to me was called The Peace to End All Peace by an American historian, David Frumkin, who talked about the history of the modern Middle East after World War I, when the Ottoman Empire fell. The short version of the book is that it was as a result of the British and French bureaucracies lying to each other that the modern Middle East was created. And there are artificial countries there. Iraq was kind of cobbled together. A variety of groupings, et cetera, were put together. And over the years, some of the issues that have to do with that have surfaced. Most Americans knew nothing about Islam, much less that there was a difference between Shia and Sunni. Many people heard about the Persians, but the difficulties between the Persians, the Iranians, and the Saudis, and Arabs, is there also. So this combination of artificial states and the sectarian problems, and then generally a vacuum in terms of some of the leadership, and then I frankly think the war in Iraq was one of the greatest disasters, our reputation, etc. I have just, by the way, one of the things that I think is important to think about when Hillary's president is how one tries to develop some kind of a either nonpartisan or bipartisan foreign policy. One really needs that. So one of the things I'm working on now, actually with Steve Hadley, who was National Security Advisor for President Bush, is taking a longer look at the Middle East and what can be done in terms of dealing with the security issues, of trying to figure out whether the boundaries are the right ones. If they are, then how to have a variety of kind of autonomous groups where the Kurds and others can have more influence over their own lives, not create a bunch of microstates, but really take a longer look at it. The issue of religion, what happens when the refugees, most refugees want to go back and try to figure out what their role would be. So it's a long story. And I think that one of the issues that has to be dealt with is the recognition that this isn't going to be solved overnight. That the U.S., we can't dictate what happens there. We don't want to, and they don't want us. But there needs to be some outside influence while the insiders project what kind of states they would like. This is not going away quickly. And I think for us, as policymakers, what's important is to make sure that America's safe, that we are operating with a coalition of countries that have similar views, that our very solid relationship with Israel continues in within an area that is definitely unfriendly to them, and then try to figure out how a younger population that is technologically trained can really take its part in it. I could go on, but it's the basis of it is that it's complicated, and you need a president of the United States that gets what this is about, doesn't say I don't want anything to do with it or I'm going to carpet bomb them, there has to be something in between. And I think that it's going to take a long time. And your point about somebody that can explain it and show what America's interest in it is I think what has to happen during the election cycle and obviously afterwards. Yes.
Yes, I've been reading Hillary's book, Our Choices, and there's a chapter on the Russian Federation and the crisis in Ukraine. She describes some interesting conversations that she had with Vladimir Putin. How would you advise Hillary when she becomes president? As to how to engage Vladimir Putin?
Well, first of all, I think that she had made the statement many times before, which is that you have to talk to people you disagree with or your enemies. I mean, she basically was one of the people that felt we did need to talk to the Iranians, so her kind of way of approaching things is knowing that you don't solve anything by just ignoring. Putin is a very complex person and a little bit different than he was when he first came into office. And in the last months, he is flexing his muscles in a very big way. I think that he has gone into the Middle East for two reasons. One is to divert attention from what is going on in Ukraine, and the other is to get involved in the Middle East, where they have been. I think the thing that has to happen is she has been accused of being somebody who said we had to reset our relationship with Russia. I think that was the right thing to do in terms of trying to figure out how you deal with another major power. She is not a shrink, and neither am I, but one has to analyze what Putin is goes on in his head, frankly. What is it he wants? And he wants to restore the identity of Russia. When I was doing a survey in 91, before I was in office, we did a lot of focus groups in all over the place, but one in Russia, and this man stands up and says, "I'm so embarrassed. We used to be a superpower, and now we're Bangladesh with missiles." And I think part of what has happened is that lack of identity, and Putin has identified himself with that. I think she has to obviously have strong relations, but also tell it like it is. You know, that they are more than a regional power, they are a power, but they cannot, in fact, start with little green men going into countries and undermining them, but she has to deal with them. I do have to tell one pin story related to that. What happened was that, this is when I made a huge mistake in terms of my signaling with pins, was that there's this great picture from when President Clinton and Secretary of Defense Cohen and I were sitting on a sofa together during the NATO summit, and I don't know who did it first, but we did the Hear No Evil, See All the Monkeys, and we looked like crazy people. Anyway, I got three monkey pins, and I wore them when I went to Moscow on our summit in 2000. And we walk in, and President Putin says to President Clinton, "We always notice what pins Secretary Albright wears. Why are you wearing those monkeys?" And I actually said, "Because I think your policy in Chechnya is evil." And he got furious at me. And President Clinton looked at me and said, "You know, you must be out of your mind. You're the chief diplomat. You've just screwed up the summit."
Is this finally a potential?
Yes. He is a very complicated man, and he is a KGB officer. That is what he is. And they are building up their military, and it's a very difficult issue. And I do think that she will have to deal with him, but I think we have to be very clear about what is acceptable and what isn't. And invading another country is not acceptable. One more question? Well, thank you all very, very much. And
thank you.
We will be watching. And there's a great privilege in being the first and a great responsibility in being the first. So everybody's going to be watching the caucuses and all of the things that you do, and there is no answer to them except for people that are dedicated to a great candidate to go out and persuade others and make sure they go. I think that's the hard part. So thank you very, very much. Here